Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Pep.
People have their opinion.
What other falsehoods are out there?
A lot of the perception things about us.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Rebuilds are difficult. Sometimes it takes years and years. I still believe, given a really good offseason with this draft pick that we have coming and with our ability to get some veteran players in here alongside these young guys, we can make a substantial leap.
Kick back, relax. Locked On Bulls starts now.
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Jordan Malley, along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls _ Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Drop your texts, your voicemails, anything you got for us. We've got preseason game number one tonight. So that means we have basketball all the way up until at least April next year. So that's a good thing. So if you've got any thoughts headed into preseason, maybe you want to react to some of the Bulls news that happened over the weekend, which we will get to. Anything you got for us, 331-979-1369, the place to do that. I took a lot of your text messages on Friday, and thank you again for everybody who dropped a text message or voicemail. So now we just have a handful of voicemails to go through on Wednesday. So very excited. So if you want to give us a call, go ahead and do that at 331-979-1369. Matt, welcome back from the weekend. We have finally made it, man. We are here, preseason game number one tonight at the United Center against the Bucks, and it couldn't come at a better time. Seems like Chicago sports in general is just in the toilet at this point, so it's good that we're getting Bulls basketball, and at least for right now, and at an optimistic standpoint. But how you doing? How was your weekend?
What up, Jordan? What up, Bulls Nation? Pretty good weekend, but yeah, just like you, man, I'm just so relieved and excited that we're finally here. We get to watch the Bulls play some basketball tonight. First preseason game of the year against division foe Milwaukee Bucks. You know, who knows how much...
Wouldn't say that you're jacked and juiced.
Oh, absolutely I'm jacked and juiced. You know, I think I'm probably going to wear Bulls across my chest tonight. You know, we'll see. We got outsiders returning for our season two premiere tonight after the game.
Fantastic.
So looking forward to that. You know, like you said, you know, the rest of Chicago sports world is kind of down right now. Obviously, you know, Cubs and Sox seasons are both over. The Bears just had a terrible game in London and lost to the Raiders, which is embarrassing considering how much we've bragged about getting the best of John Gruden. He just trolled the Bears so hard in the locker room for the Raiders after their win yesterday. That was tough to deal with. But I mean, I'm cautiously optimistic, like, about watching this Bulls team play this season. Like the offseason moves, and just really excited to see what we do. And as far as preseason, man, there's, you know, plenty of storylines, but I think the big one is going to be what Boylan does with that point guard rotation.
I'm with you on that. I'm very excited to see what that's going to look like, how things shape out. Obviously, with the preseason going on, they've already talked about it too, day one in media day, is that they're going to be very cautious with all of these guys, especially their starters. The goal is to get to opening night with, as far as we know, no other injuries to this Bulls team, this Bulls roster. So we'd see probably sparingly minutes from the starters. We're going to see a lot of the second unit guys and a lot of the rotation players play a decent chunk of minutes tonight. But we'll talk a little bit about the preseason at the end of the episode, talk a little bit about that game, and as well as what we expect from the preseason. But, Matt, we need to get to the most important, well, I guess the second most important news of the weekend, and that is they have finally fulfilled our request. Not at 100%, but they finally filled our request for the City Edition jerseys. We finally found out that the Bulls released those this year, and they are an ode to what we saw back in the 90s. The jersey that we've asked them to bring back for the last 20 years is finally back in a newer fashion. How did you? I saw your reaction, so I kind of want to hear from you first. What was your reaction when you saw this, and are you happy with it, or are you a little disappointed?
Well, yes, I'm both. I'm happy that we're getting a pinstripe look back, but I am ultimately disappointed because when, you know, they had that tweet that was like, you know, major announcement coming soon, I was thinking it might have to do with this season's all, you know, alternative statement edition jersey. And there's just been, you know, so much talk about bring the pinstripe back. As much as we've enjoyed these city edition jerseys for the past couple of seasons, we've just all been crying out to want to see those pinstripes again. So when we got the pinstripes, I was like, okay, well, these look pretty fresh. I like them, but they're not just the simple right answer of bringing back exactly what we wanted, which was black with red pinstripes and Bulls across the chest. Not Chicago, but Bulls. You know, I made a joke, like, clearly they didn't consult Boylan about these city edition jerseys. Like,
you know, we got Bulls across our chest.
Because it says Chicago instead of Bulls and the pinstripes. And look, I don't even know what you think about this, and I'm excited to see what they actually look like on the court. But to me, unless you're zoomed in super close to those jerseys, you can barely tell that those pinstripes are even there. So, you know, maybe they were going for something a bit more subtle, but they're not even like white pinstripes. They're like this weird, like reflective, like two-tone grayish pinstripe that I don't even know if it's going to show up on the court that much. So, like, yeah, okay, good for you. You went back to pinstripes when everybody was calling for them. But for a team that just shamelessly lives off of the glory days and cashes bank off of the glory days, if we want an old jersey from the glory days, just give us that fucking jersey. Exactly that jersey. No, we gotta shake it up and do something a little bit different.
Let me talk you off the hill real quick. Before you jump, let me talk you off real quick. So I was angry at first when I saw it a little bit, just because, like you said, the pinstripes in it look like a reflective silver, and they're super faded. Also, too, on the arms, where it goes underneath the armpit and around the collar, they decided not to go with like the tricolor. They went with the red on red and then the black in the middle, which I think kind of looks a little bizarre. But like you said, it could just be the photo. Here's my thought on it. They want to preserve the integrity of that jersey from that era. Would it be a mark on the Bulls if they brought that exact same jersey back and we went out there and the season was a disaster and the Bulls are representing 20 years from the last championship this year in that jersey and we're going out there and this could happen, but you go out there and have a season like you did last year where you're sending guys from the G League and Cristiano Felicio out there to play decent minutes? Like, that is a scenario that could happen. So maybe they just wanted to, you know, leave that there. Everybody loved that jersey and they wanted to do something that was going to be fresh, but an ode to it. So from my perspective, they didn't soil the pureness of that jersey from the 90s and what we associate with Michael Jordan and winning. They just kind of said, here's a look at what you all wanted, but it's an updated 2019-2020 version. And also, too, it ties into the whole reason why they have the city editions in the first place, and it's a connection to the city. So once they do their whole full write-up, I'd like to know a little bit more about like what went into it besides just the framework of what the 90s jersey looked like. So I think that's what they did. And ultimately, I'm kind of glad with that they did that. Keep Michael Jordan and that jersey and that era together. And give me something fresh, give me something new.
Yeah, no, and that's a totally fair counterpoint. I'm totally with you there. As far as like, well, just let that legendary team just have that jersey forever and never bring back that exact version of the pinstripes. I get that. And you know, does this young rebuilding team that is coming off of a 22-win season deserve to wear the same jersey that MJ and Scottie and Rodman and the second 3-peat team wore? Yeah, probably not. Probably not. That's, you know, that's a totally fair point. But to me, it still goes back to like for an organization that is still resting on the laurels of that decade, and you know, John Paxson still has his job because of that decade. Okay, are you really concerned about protecting the legacy of that decade and the jerseys that they wore when really what we know was you want to make more money and that's why alternative jerseys exist. Because it's not like if they went back to that exact same thing, people would be like, well, I don't want to buy that jersey because I already have that jersey. Well, you don't have a LaVine or a Markkanen or a Wendell jersey with, you know, with their names on the back of that same old version. And, like, you know, so I'm glad that you're with me in thinking that these pinstripes look a little strange. And I'm, you know, like I said, I'm curious to see just how much they are pronounced and visible on the court. I will say, however, as far as the tops of the jerseys, meh. The shorts I do really like. The shorts with, like, the Bull logo with the black and red diamond on either side. And then the red and black waistband with the four white stars, like, across, like, where the belt buckle would be. I think that that's a really sharp pair of shorts.
I'll have to go back and listen to our take from last year on when they unveiled the city jerseys. But I felt like you and I were kind of wishy-washy on them. We liked them, but we were, like, not really sure what they were going to look like in person. And they ended up looking a lot better than they did just in the photos. So I'm hoping that's the same here. The biggest knock I have is with the collar and around the arms. Like, I hate that it's two colors instead of the three, because that's kind of the marker on top of the Bulls being across the chest. But yeah, I'm with you. So I'm hoping that it looks a little bit better in person, and I think it will. So, but ultimately, like you said, it's about making money. It's about getting fans to buy jerseys every single year. And they were two for two on these city jerseys. That first year's jersey was fire. Last year's was absolutely fire. And I think these are going to be a nice, subtle, and you know how the Bulls are. Look at their jerseys. They haven't changed in, what, 50 years, 60 years, as far as the way that they look. So it is a little bit different, and I'm glad they're continuing to do that. But it's kind of a classic spin, as opposed to, like, what the Magic are doing right now, where they brought the exact same ones back, minus the logos on the jerseys. But that's the other thing, too, is glad we don't have a big-ass green Zenny logo on there. At least it's a little more subtle on this jersey.
Yeah, it is just kind of white, and it kind of blends in with the top of the jersey with the white bordering of a Chicago and the white, you know, Nike swoosh on the other side. It's not as obtrusive as I think some of these other new, you know, logo brandings are on other teams' jerseys. And I think you're also right when you say, like, you know, this Bulls logo and jersey history is just so iconic that you don't really need to change it all that much. And it's a, you know, it's a new updated take on a classic. That's how the Bulls pitched it when they, you know, posted the pictures of this pinstripe jersey on Instagram and Twitter. They said a new take on a classic jersey. So unlike these other teams, small market teams, new teams that are constantly trying to revamp their logos, and some of them are just absolutely hideous, like, it's hard for the Bulls to mess up because so much of what they do with their logo is just iconic and timeless. So, I'm with you. I like the past couple of City Edition jerseys. I'm excited to see what these look like on the court. I think we don't get to see these worn by the players until, like, late November, if I remember seeing something on Twitter correctly, as far as with the first game that they're wearing these. So I can't wait to wear them. And you know what? If they actually turn out looking real fresh and these pinstripes look real solid on the court, I might have to cop me one of these.
Yeah, same here. And I'm even thinking about, too, before they completely go away, is go and buy one from last year. I loved those. You know, that light blue color, if they didn't do this pinstripe thing, I would have liked to see them continue to incorporate that light blue as an alternative color to the Bulls, because I think it looks phenomenal with the red and the black. But yes, I think for the most part, too, the reaction overwhelmingly was the fact that everybody really loved this and this new spin on this jersey. So I think it's going to look better in person. Everything usually does look better in person as far as from an apparel standpoint. But you're right. November 22nd versus the Heat at home is the first time they're going to wear it. And then they're going to wear it against the Warriors, Pacers, Suns, Pacers, and Nets.
Oh.
At least that's so far what they have planned.
So you know what that means? That means the first time we get a look at these pinstripe jerseys, we might see another epic Zach LaVine, Jimmy Butler showdown. If it's Bulls Heat.
I was going to say, I thought
Zach LaVine in the new pinstripe jersey just dropping 40 on Jimmy and the Heat. How awesome would that be?
That would be great. I thought you were going to say they were going to bring back the tribute video for Wade, because you know he's going to be sitting courtside.
Oh, God. He's retired.
He's making it in for that trip on the 22nd.
Oh, God. I hope
you know
not.
He is. So, but you're right. It is. It's going to be something to, yeah, it's kind of a memorable night then of Jimmy Butler's return in the East to a Bulls team. The last time he was here, he choked away a game with the 76ers. But I'm excited. Give us your reaction. 331-979-1369. Do you guys like these jerseys? Are you guys a little bit disappointed, or are you more than happy with what they did with them? Hit us up. I know you can start to pre-order these, and they were live as soon as they announced them from the Bulls team store at the United Center. So you can start pre-ordering there. I would assume they're going to go live shortly after that. And I haven't checked Nike's site, but usually Nike is pretty good about getting those jerseys up almost right away. So yeah, again, if you want to order it right away, go to contact the people at the United Center. I think it's called Madhouse Team Store. So yeah, contact Madhouse Team Store.
There you go. Bulls are going to be raking in the money again.
If they don't do it in ticket sales, they do it and find it in another way. So you're right. We do have, speaking of just Bulls and ad sales and money and all of that, we have a very important topic to talk about and some very, very important audio that was dropped over the weekend, which Bulls fans were right on top of it. White Sox fans were right on top of it. Chicago sports fans were all over it. But before we get to that, just a quick shout out to Indochino. Indochino is the world's largest made-to-measure menswear brand. Start your style upgrade now with $30 off your total purchase of $399 or more at Indochino.com when entering the promo code Locked On at checkout. It's wedding season right now, so make sure you're looking good and you get yourself an Indochino suit. $30 off a purchase of $399 or more. Indochino.com, promo code Locked On. So Matt, when I heard this audio for the first time, I wasn't really sure what I was expecting from it. And as I'm listening, I'm first looking at the date and I'm like, damn, this is like almost 3 weeks old. How did we not catch this in the first place? And if you haven't heard it already, I'm going to play it for you. And it's David Sampson, former president of the Miami Marlins, talking about advice he got from Jerry Reinsdorf when he was younger and still running the team for the Marlins. Basically, what it said is Jerry Reinsdorf's advice to a small market team for him to continue success is to always come in second place.
Just strictly as a fan, that this keeps everybody competitive. It keeps everybody honest. It avoids tanking. People are trying to win because there's a financial benefit to it. And you've told me in the past that, well, you'll just try to stay afloat, stay in the middle. You won't try to win a championship. You'll try to fool your fans that way, and you just try to not go down. And that could just be a hell of a purgatory, really, for the fans.
You know, Jerry Reinsdorf, when I first got into baseball, I've never told this story before, and I like Jerry very much, and I'm sorry, Jerry, but here it comes. He sat me down. I was 32 years old, just in baseball for my first of 18 years, and he said, you know what? Here's my best advice to you. Finish in second place every single year. Because your fans will say, wow, we've got a shot. We're in it. But there's always the carrot left. There's always one more step to take. And I actually, to my detriment, listened to him and stayed in sort of bogged down in mediocrity. 1 year we won the World Series. 1 year we lost 100 million. 100 million, both 100 games and 100 million. But we never rebuilt. We never had an owner who wanted to tank, who wanted, but we needed that.
Yeah.
And that was the problem with the Marlins. Yeah,
and so it perfectly encapsulates everything the White Sox did from 2010 to or from 2000 to 2010. And it perfectly encapsulates everything the Bulls have done from 2010 to 2017. What was your thoughts on what you heard from this guy? And are you buying this to be 100% truthful? Or you think this is kind of a narrative and kind of played up for the podcast?
Well, yeah. And you should also be sure to mention that when relayed and asked for comment about his previous comment from back in the day, Jerry Reinsdorf said he didn't remember ever saying this. So there is that. However, Jerry Reinsdorf is approximately 240 years old. So maybe he doesn't remember every conversation he had with the younger, you know, GM or manager or whoever in the world of baseball that happened, you know, 30 years ago. Do I believe that Jerry made these comments? Do I believe these comments from this guy? Yeah, probably. I mean, if it was something that stuck with him all these years later, then it probably was something that Jerry said to him. Is it hard to hear? as a Chicago sports fan, you know, obviously for me, it doesn't bug me as much being a Cubs fan, not a Sox fan, as I'm sure it bugs you. And this was said in the realm of baseball, not basketball. But you could certainly, as a Bulls fan, take that kind of sentiment from Jerry Reinsdorf and apply it to his other team and say, yeah, that's kind of how we feel Jerry has treated this organization as he's owned it in the post-Jordan years. Don't really care about winning titles. Making money's great. Being relevant, making the playoffs, is basically where we'll be happy. So I guess, you know, constantly finishing in second place is a different way to say that, or a slightly different version of that, where, you know, Bulls fans always talk about the mediocre to low to mediocre bar that is set by this organization for being the third largest market city and globally one of the most recognized sports teams, like, of the last half a century. It's a low bar, and that kind of comment from Jerry just only further proves and furthers this narrative that Bulls fans feel when it comes to the Reinsdorfs and how they operate, not just with the White Sox, but with the Bulls as well. It's frustrating.
Yeah, I think if you talk to most Bulls fans, especially if you're just a Bulls fan, you didn't grow up being a White Sox fan on top of it, you didn't need affirmation, right? You didn't need to be convinced that... They look at their pockets before they look at the talent that's on the either on the floor or on the field, in Jerry Reinsdorf's case, owning two teams. And again, I want to kind of preface this too with this is more tailored towards him talking about how he goes about operating a baseball team as opposed to an NBA team. And again, it's not the greatest look in the world when we're talking about a guy that won six that is part of the reason why we won six championships and had the greatest player in the world talking about second place as being the key to success and longevity in the front office of a professional organization. I find that just wild to me. Like, Michael Jordan said, fuck you, we're not losing games. We're out here to win, and we're out here to step on your throat every single night. And for an owner to turn around and give advice about being successful in a professional organization is to be the first loser just kind of blows my mind, makes me laugh. But I don't think anybody needed affirmation that the Bulls and the White Sox, more tailored towards the White Sox and how they do things there, they look at their pockets as well as they look at the talent on the field and the floor. And it's unfortunate to hear this. And who knows, it could have been embellished a little bit too. I did see some people talking about stories in the past that Samson had and saying he embellished on those things and some of the things he did lie about. And again, this could have been a drunk conversation between two guys sitting at the bar, putting back a couple whiskeys. Like, that's what this could have been, as opposed to something like, hey, Samson, come here, come into my office for a second. Let's have a sit down. Let me give you some pure-hearted advice here. It could have been just them shooting the shit, and it's something that he just kind of, for whatever reason, has been saving this in his vault for the last 20 years. But yeah, not the thing that I wanted to hear out of the owner of six championships.
And I think, you know, the other thought I had upon hearing this is that I don't necessarily care about Jerry anymore, because to me, the bigger concern for Bulls fans, and, you know, and Sox fans as well, but certainly for us here on Locked On Bulls, and the big concern for Bulls fans is how Michael Reinsdorf is going to operate. Because Jerry is just a figurehead at this point, and not to be too morbid, but Jerry won't be around all that much longer. And from what we know and what we have heard and what we believe, when Jerry goes to greener pastures, Michael ain't selling. Michael Reinsdorf is completely dedicated to keeping ownership of this team. And it's not about what Jerry believes, and it's not about what Jerry believed 30 years ago, giving advice to a younger executive in Major League Baseball. For Bulls fans, it is about what Michael Reinsdorf believes and what Michael Reinsdorf's mode of operandi is going to be. Because we hear these things in interviews that Michael Reinsdorf does about how he hates losing and he gets really worked up in his, you know, in his owner's suite when he's watching the Bulls lose by 20 on their home floor and he can't stand it and he's so competitive. And we hear it from John Paxson, and we hear it from some of the more, you know, ownership and front office friendly media outlets in this city. And I gag every time I hear that because I don't believe it. I don't. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Michael Reinsdorf actually does care that much, and he does just drive himself crazy watching his team lose by 30 every night in back-to-back seasons. So the reason I don't believe it is because everything that they have done up until this offseason, which we actually gave them some credit for making moves that made sense, was evidence that showed that they cared more about making money than they did about winning basketball games and actually competing for championships. That's the standard that this fan base expects after the 90s. And it's honestly, for everything that this fan base has done to put money in their pockets, it's what this fan base deserves. And for all of these years, we just have been wondering, how much does Michael Reinsdorf actually really care? Because it's Michael, not Jerry, that matters moving forward.
And the funny thing is too, I think more so than anything, it's what Bulls fans expect after what happened in the 90s. Like, when you win six championships, there's a certain level of expectation of what a team should look like. And I don't think anybody that lived through that 90s era that was a diehard Bulls fan or even a casual fan would ever think that the Bulls would get to this point where we're at right now. Like, over the last 5 years, kind of being a laughingstock, just turmoil everywhere, doing things to kind of penny pinch, all of these things that added up. Nobody would have thought that's where we would be right now. But you hit on a really interesting point, too, to think about. Maybe the reason why there's been penny pitching over the last few years and all of that is that transition from Jerry to Michael. Jerry was thinking about the way he runs the White Sox, and the way the White Sox are run is like a small organization. They're like a small market team. Although they play here in Chicago, they still are run like a small market team. And maybe that was getting leaked over to this Bulls team after some type of transition and, you know, not wanting to pay Jimmy Butler the Supermax or anything like that. So I wonder if that was what was being bled into what we were seeing with this Bulls team. So now I think this is going to be an important opportunity for Michael Reinsdorf to say, hey, man, like, you making money is great and that's fantastic. And I'm not telling you not to. And that can be an importance. But it doesn't have to be mutually exclusive from the talent on the floor as well. Like, you can still build a winning team and also make a shit ton of money. Both of those things can happen. I'm wondering if Reinsdorf, with being a little bit younger and still, like, obviously know what's going on, if he's going to push towards that or if he ends up falling back on saying, you know what, if we make the playoffs and, you know, we're a 5 or 6 seed every year and we're exciting and maybe we get out of the first round, that's good enough for us. I'm hoping that's not the standard that's being set. But I think it's kind of too early to figure that out. I think we need a decent chunk of years to kind of be able to evaluate where they're taking this franchise.
Absolutely. And I think in, you know, along with the actual, you know, maybe they were looking at analytics for once, shrewd moves that they made in the offseason in free agency, also bringing in some solid coaches to help Jim Boylan. They also last season just did more of that stupid, you know, hashtag cash considerations bullshit that drives the fan base crazy. It's, hey, we're really good at bookkeeping here at the Chicago Bulls organization. We pride ourselves on our bookkeeping. We'll help other teams do some clerical work to, you know, clear up whatever their cap situation is. And in the meantime, we'll stuff a couple extra $100K in our pockets. That's what they're known for. And for an organization that is in this big of a market, that's the stuff that drives the fan base crazy, and rightly so. So does Michael Reinsdorf want to win championships, or does Michael Reinsdorf want to be a really good bookkeeping owner and executive that helps the team always come out on top fiscally, regardless of where they finish in the standings? And that's the narrative that exists right now. And that is, you know, one that the fan base will have to wait and see if it changes when Jerry goes and Michael officially takes over. But, you know, in some ways, Michael already has taken over. Michael's running the day-to-day, and this is the kind of stuff that he's having his guys do. Clerical work to make a few extra $100,000 here and there on multiple different trades that don't actually affect their roster. That appears to be the thing that Michael was focused on for the last couple of years and the thing that he's good at. That's not really all that exciting to hear.
Yeah, and especially, too, besides just being able to play the drops, but of him just gloating over Jerry West and what he thinks and what all these other people think about what the organization is doing and the direction that they're headed in. I think just to play a little bit of a devil's advocate before we wrap up is the fact that the Bulls were willing to spend when the Bulls had a team good enough that they thought there was a championship window ahead. Like in 2010, they were willing to spend the money and they were going to find a way around it if those guys wanted to come. If LeBron, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh all said, hey, you know what? No, we're going to Chicago. The Bulls would have figured a way out to do that. So they're willing to spend the money. And I think, you know, I want to believe that when Michael Reinsdorf says, you know, when this team gets to a point where we do see an opportunity that this looks like a competitive basketball team and we're putting something together, we're going to spend the money. I think them signing Thaddeus Young and Thomas Satoransky kind of gave us a little bit of a glimpse at that, that they're not being totally cheap. But also, too, they wanted to do that in 2010. Even if you want to go back before that, like the Baby Bulls era, the 2006, 2007, 2008, they spent the money on Ben Wallace. It didn't work out, but they did spend the money. So it's happening. They're just not making the right decisions on players. So hopefully that continues to reign true. And Michael Reinsdorf backs up his words by saying he does really care about winning. So I think this would be a whole different conversation and a lot more negative if we were sitting in the White Sox position and talking it from that standpoint. Because again, this audio all goes back to the mindset of what he was doing with the White Sox and how that was being successful. Although it is interesting because he does own an NBA team that's like on the complete opposite spectrum of where the White Sox are and how they build success. So, I think people shouldn't be as outraged as they might have been, and maybe people aren't, but I had to laugh at this story, man, that it's only the Bulls, right? Literally only the Bulls.
And as far as what this rebuild does from here on out, and if some of these young guys that they've added since the Jimmy trade actually turn into stars, but they still need complementary pieces, or they still need that one really big crucial piece. Because, you know, I think you would share my opinion that this team is going to be interesting and hopefully more exciting this season, but they're still at least one big piece away from actually contending in the East. You know, and you know, maybe Zach or Lowry turn into that piece, but it doesn't look like it right now. They both look like complementary pieces, and this team is still lacking a bona fide number one superstar caliber player. And if they can't get that done in free agency, you know, are they going to be willing to spend the money? I hope the answer is yes. But then the other problem that Michael Reinsdorf might have to address, despite what John Paxson refuses to admit when he does his interviews, is that there is a negative stigma around this team nationally right now. And that has to have some kind of, that has to play some kind of factor into recent years and why big name players appear so disinterested in coming here. There is reparations to be done to this team's reputation, and Michael Reinsdorf has to acknowledge that. It's not only about will Michael be willing to spend big, but will Michael be willing to address the fact that the quote-unquote build the right culture stuff, it's been a joke in the last several seasons, and they need to do something to repair that. And that's also on him, not just spending, but actually getting guys that he can spend big on when the time is right.
I'm with you on that. And just to your point really quickly about like what you were talking about with the fact that there's still a piece away from really being, you know, one of the teams that we can consider at least for the next 3, 4, 5 years, at least we hope, to be a contender in the East, to be in that top five conversation, even with as young as these guys are. I would even say I would go one step further, too, is you need some combination of Markkanen, Carter, Kobe White, any of those guys, Zach LaVine, any of those guys to be a legit all-star type of player, a guy that can be a solid number two, a borderline number one on a rebuilding up-and-coming young team. You need that to happen in order to have the conversation legitimately about hanging with teams 2, 3 years down the road like the 76ers or like the Raptors. I'm not the Raptors, the Bucks. Any of those teams, you need two stars. And I think the Bulls have a good opportunity to have one right already on their roster. It's going to be about, like you said, executing, willing to spend the money on that second piece to really take that next step. So I think that's all stuff, too, we don't really need to necessarily concern in the short term about. Short term is about getting these guys to chemistry, and the Bulls made those right steps this offseason. But we always talk about it, too. What's the end game? What's the long-term goal? And it seems like the last few years, the Bulls have been decent at executing short-term plans, but the long-term plan is still very, very much up in the air. So I guess we have to, again, once again, just say wait and see and see. And that'll kind of, their moves and their actions will kind of define how Reinsdorf decides to take this Bulls team into the next decade of basketball. Hopefully it's filled with a lot more positivity than it was 2010 through 2019.
Yeah. And I mean, like medium to long term right now, I think the situation the team is in is, as you were talking about, hopefully Markkanen and or LaVine develop into all-star caliber players. The free agent class of 2020 is pretty underwhelming. In 2021, assuming that Otto does opt in to his option and stay another season, which I think he will, you will have Otto's money coming off the books. You'll have Felicio's money coming off the books in the free agent class of 2021, which will be a big one. And that is when, hopefully, after this season and another season, the Bulls are a still young and up-and-coming team on the rise. And that is when we will really be judging Michael Reinsdorf, and if they're still here, Gar and Pax, on getting the right big piece and spending big and convincing that correct piece to come join this team. That's something that we're not going to get the answer to. Like you were saying, it's kind of wait and see right now. To me, it's the summer of 2021 and how much this team has improved between now and then.
I'm with you. Give us your thoughts, though. I know most of you Bulls fans out there, if you're on Twitter, you saw this audio over the weekend. And again, this came from the Mystery Crate podcast on ESPN. It's part of Dan Le Batard's like new network that he has. He's got like 4, 5, 6 podcasts, a part of that over at ESPN. But it was an interesting interview, too. I ended up spending the rest of the time listening to the like back half of it. Interesting conversations and interviews, and I like that podcast. They drop a surprise guest every single episode, so it again goes along the lines of their name. But yeah, if you want to listen to that in full, it's about like 2.5 minutes. The disappointing thing is there was no follow-up to this story and more questions and probing about what exactly went on after that conversation. And if he decided to use that advice, and he did say in a little portion of it that he did, it was a detriment to him. But yeah, if you want to go check that out, check it out at Mystery Crate Podcast over at ESPN. The final thing we should get to, Matt, is just a quick signing and update. And I'm going to let you pronounce his name because I am totally going to mess it up. I know Simi. How do you pronounce his last name?
I believe it's Shitu.
Gotcha. So Simi Shitu, from Vanderbilt, rookie, didn't get drafted, but was signed to the Bulls over the weekend. So this is going to be more, this is just more of like a body filler for training camp and something that they'll look at as like a long-term project, send him to the G League, and hopefully he turns out to be something. The first thing that I noted here was seeing where he was ranked coming out of high school. ESPN had him number 19 in that 2018 class, and he was a 5-star recruit. So definitely somebody to just maybe keep our eyes
on. McDonald's All-American too. Yeah, I mean, like, I think a lot of people would point to Darius Garland's injury as to one of the reasons that Simi had kind of a disappointing season compared to how he was ranked coming out of high school. He does certain things well. He can certainly defend some of the bigger bodies with, you know, he's like 6'10", he's got a 7'1 wingspan. He blocked a lot of shots. He got his hands into passing lanes and stole, got a nice amount of steals too for a guy his size, but he's not really that versatile on the defensive end, and switching at the NBA level, I think, is going to be a big challenge for him if he does get to the NBA level. He's limited offensively, really has no range to his game whatsoever, but was pretty damn efficient around the rim. Shot 61.9% at shots at the rim last season, with a whopping 59.4% of his total field goal attempts coming right at the basket. He does like to rebound the ball, get out and run, which is, of course, a big favorite of Jim Boylan. He talks about that all the time. He talked about it with Chandler Hutchison and Lauri Markkanen in last season, getting, you know, not only your wings but some of your bigs to just get out and run, create some of those transition offense opportunities. And, you know, Simi was pretty good at that at Vandy last season. But, again, I think a lot of people, the reason he fell out and just went undrafted in 2019 is that His season at Vandy kind of fell off a cliff with the injury to Darius Garland. So it's a nice piece to add to the training camp roster. I assume that he'll, you know, hopefully get some run with the Windy City Bulls this season. And I think, you know, as far as the ways that teams add to the depth and add to the depth, including their G League teams, is if you can find low risk, high reward players. That's that's usually what you're aiming for. And I think that they found one with this kid.
Yeah, like exactly what you said, low risk, high reward type of player. And the nice thing too is he's going to turn 20 years old in November. So it's a guy that too, we may even forget he's even there in the G League for the next 2 or 3 years. But hopefully, your anticipation would be that the guys in the G League, the coaching staff there, is monitoring him, developing him, and something does happen. It would only be a bonus for the Bulls if something turned into a decent player. And what I find fascinating is that he was talked about like any of these other top prospects that we saw go in the lottery as being like the next greatest NBA player coming out of Canada. Like all of this stuff about him being super hyped, and then he ended up going undrafted. I'm with you too, though. Like, and everybody else that's saying that the Darius Garland injury, on top of there was about 3 or 4 other guys that were high profile guys coming out of that recruiting class that ended up not going to Vanderbilt. It had Vanderbilt signed another guy or two, we'd have been talking about a legit Final Four contender. So that, I think, in combination of everything else going on there too, Bryce Drew, speaking of the person that gave them the advice to sign him, the guy who recruited him, we know Jim Boylan favorite, Jim Boylan friend, surprised he didn't even get hired on the coaching staff. No, he's just a friend of the organization as well. You know for a fact that the Bulls picked up the phone, had multiple conversations with Bryce Drew, and ultimately that was part of the reason why he signed here.
Yeah. A couple other notes about his game and a couple other numbers, and shout out to our guy Michael Walton, who does some great stuff for NBCS Bulls coverage. He did a deep dive on Simi when the Bulls signed him. For a guy his size, he had a pretty high assist rate at Vandy in his lone season. 16.5% assist rate, which was the fifth best on his team at Vandy last year. Actually, pretty decent distributor for a guy his size. And of course, that goes along with what I was saying earlier with him, you know, just grabbing rebounds, getting out, running the floor, and distributing, which he showed that he had the ability to do. And we'll hopefully see more of that kind of stuff from him as he plays at the G League level. And I mean, interesting note about that assist rate, that's higher than both Zion Williamson and another top 10 pick in that draft class, Rui Hachimura. And that's, you know, from a guy who even played more of a front court role than those two did. So there's potential there. He also did, as Mike Walton points out, have a pretty high turnover rate as well, 20.9% turnover rate. So definitely a work in progress. But like you said, a guy still very young. Hopefully he can hone some of those playmaking abilities and skills at the G League level.
Hilarious to me. One of the comments underneath the Bulls Twitter, which is, people are back, man. They're like in midseason form already. But somebody commented on there and was like, the Bulls have decided to pivot from going from shitty bottom of the barrel NBA point guards to shitty bottom of the barrel big men. So I got a good laugh out of that. The last thing I will say is don't ask him to shoot a three. He was 1 for 18 in 32 games. That is good enough for 5.6% from the three-point line. So not a big man that can shoot threes.
Wow.
He's also very, 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 very bad at shooting free throws. 57.6% on the season.
Ooh. Yeah, that's pretty stinky. Just, get in the gym and shoot 1,000 free throws a day until you get better.
I guess so. And it goes in line with the John, and this might be more of a John Paxson thing, or maybe it is him and Gar. They're just fascination with really athletic power forwards. They love themselves a athletic, offense-first big man. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, Joakim Noah, anybody that's a young big man that has any type of potential at all, the Bulls are on top of it already. So, I mean, this is, again, probably not going to talk about him for another year and a half unless he does something outstanding right in the G League. But it is cool. It is cool.
Or, God forbid, Luke Kornet's turf toe turns out to be worse than we thought. Daniel Gafford, gets hurt and, like, all of a sudden the Bulls just like go from having a lot of depth at the front court spots to having no depth. Other than that, I would be shocked to see him get any run with the Bulls this
season. Agreed. The only thing that would make it interesting is it would be fun to watch him and Gafford play alongside each other down there at a Windy City game. And we'll probably you'll probably get probably get an opportunity to see that at some point this year, I would imagine. So,
although you better hope that the other three guys on the floor can all shoot,
yeah.
Because if you play Gafford and this Simi kid together, you're not spacing the floor with either of those two.
It's going to look like a packed paint. Like Ben Simmons trying to shoot a three. Like that's what it's going to look like. So, but yeah, good for the Bulls. They made that signing as well. So, yeah, training camp roster up to 20. Again, probably won't talk about him for another 2 years, but good to have just kind of stashing some pieces for long-term projects. And that's all we can ask is just to be creative. And that's what the Bulls did here with this signing. And again, it could go meaningless as well. But Bucks and Bulls tonight, preseason game number one. If you're headed out to the United Center tonight, have a great time. Be sure to check out the jerseys too. I'm sure they will have them at least on display while you're there. So if anybody's going to the game, shoot us a couple pictures of it. If you decide to pick up one.
And the debut of the brand new upgraded Jumbotron scoreboard above center court.
I did. I saw some of those pictures from fans tweeting them out too, and they were invited to open practice this weekend, and that scoreboard looks sweet.
Yeah, it looks massive. It looks way bigger than the old one, and it does, I gotta admit, it looks pretty damn cool. I can't wait to see it.
That's gonna about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Hit us up at 331-979-1369. Drop your texts and your voicemails there. We'll do mailbag again on Wednesday. We'll get to all of your voicemails, even including the ones that were dropped last week. So thank you again for making those calls. You can do it all season long. If you're a relatively new listener to the show, save this number in your phone as Locked On Bulls, 331-979-1369. You can always shoot us a text or a call at any time. Thank you again to Indochino for being one of the sponsors of our show today. Again, Locked On, promo code Indochino purchase over $3.99 or more. So go check that out at Indochino.com. We're on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. Enjoy the game tonight. It's preseason, so everybody take it with a grain of salt. Don't have a freak out. Let's hope for health. And we will be back with you guys tomorrow to discuss it and so much more. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley, Bulls Nation. We are out of here. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.